This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon. Coming up, a new generation's interest in Edith Piaf, France's Little Sparrow. But first, the writer E.B. White once cautioned a biographer not to refer to him as beloved. "I'm an old advertising man," wrote Mr. White, "and I know that people would rather buy a book about a writer everybody hates the guts of." Well, it'd be a shame to miss this one. A new revised edition of E.B. White's letters has just been published. Mr. White was the writer who took the personal essay to new heights of elegance, wit, and pith. He loved writing about his life on a farm in Maine, yet no writer has ever been more eloquent about New York City. His style was often called compressed and plain, yet few writers ever had a style that was more extravagantly admired. He wrote for perhaps the most sophisticated popular magazine in America, and he charmed young readers of all ages in books that included Charlotte's Web and Stuart Little. This new edition of his letters begins almost a century ago, in 1908, when at 8 years of age he writes his older brother Albert, "I'm sure it is a long time since your post came, but I've been waiting for something to say," to one of the last, in 1984, when he tells a friend who's just turned 85, "Stay on your feet, it's the place to be." Now, John Updike has done the introduction to this collection of E.B. White's letters. We're joined now from New York by Mr. White's stepson, Roger Angel, senior editor at The New Yorker, for which E.B. White wrote for so long. Mr. Angel, thanks so much for being with us.
Nice to be with you.
And Andy, as you called E.B. White, was your stepfather.
That's right.
Married to Catherine Angel White, your mother. Did he ever talk to you about what made him want to become a writer?
No, he was not writerly in that sense. I never heard him talk. I heard him talk about how hard writing was. I heard him talk about that all the time. Mm-hmm. It was always a long, hard slog through the day and to meet a deadline. And I could just see how hard it was. He didn't complain more than writers do.
Did he use letters to work things out in his mind?
I think he was always working things out. There's a tone of involvement in all his letters, involvement with himself, with what is going on in his mind. When he mails off Charlotte's Web, he's full of doubt about that. He was a very modest writer, very exacting writer. I expected a lot of himself, not for ambitious writing, but he wanted to get things right.
If I could ask you to turn to page 182 in the book. Mm-hmm. 1st of March 1939, he writes to Eugene Saxton, where he encloses the unfinished manuscript of a book called Stuart Little.
You will be shocked and grieved to discover that the principal character of the story has somewhat the attributes and appearance of a mouse. This does not mean that I am either challenging or denying Mr. Disney's genius. At the risk of seeming a very whimsical fellow indeed, I'll have to break down and confess to you that Stuart Little appeared to me in a dream, all complete, with his hat, his cane, and his brisk manner. Since it was the only fictional figure ever to honor and disturb my sleep, I was deeply touched and felt I was not free to change him into a grasshopper or a wallaby. Luckily, he bears no resemblance, either physically or temperamentally, to Mickey. I guess that's a break for all of us. Stop in here for a drink some fine afternoon. We're enjoying room service and would like to see you.
I guess living
he's staying
in the hotel.
At the Gramercy Park Hotel.
Yeah. Would things come to him that way?
Well,
maybe
no,
not in sleep.
They're coming to things coming to him in a dream. I would say no. I mean, I'd forgotten that Stuart Little came to him in a dream. It is not typical. I never heard him spring up from bed and say, "I had a dream last night," and start to write.
Mm-hmm. How would ideas come to him? Do you know?
Well, Charlotte's Web came from him watching a spider on his place in Maine. Mm-hmm. I think it was the spider down in his boathouse where he sometimes went down to work on the newsbreak, those little page fillers at the bottom of the column in The New Yorker, which he edited for something like 57 years.
Yeah.
The extraordinary thing about him was that when he arrived, he started to become a farm person in the mid-30s when they bought this place in Maine. And at first he was quite self-conscious about it and thought he was not good at this, but he was immensely good at the daily chores, the hundreds and hundreds of little things that you have to do to keep a place in the country going.
Yeah.
And this sort of thing went into his writing. I mean, when he came, I think he wrote Charlotte's Web after he knew enough country things, knew enough about animals and how a country place works that he could write about sheep and pigs and spiders with some confidence because he knew how they behaved.
Do you have any strong thoughts, Mr. Angel, about what email has done to the quality of personal correspondence?
Well, it's done away with it, basically. I mean, it's not just the loss to historians and to family members and to writers everywhere, but it's the loss of pleasure to the letter writer. We all used to write, everybody used to write letters. And you wrote everybody, each person you wrote regularly, you did in a different tone of voice, which was your connection with them. Mm-hmm. I was away overseas in the Pacific for more than 3 years, and I wrote every day to somebody. I mean, I wrote to my wife, to my father, my mother, and my stepfather, and a lot of other people, and that's the way the war went by. People wrote letters, but now they're doing it in emails, and it's not the same.
Yeah.
I think.
May I ask, what's it like to know that other people read and learn from and enjoy and are warmed by your family's personal letters?
Well, I think it's fine. I don't sense any violation of privacy here at all, because in the first place, he's edited a lot himself. There's a lot of Andy White that isn't in here. Mm-hmm. There's a lot about the family that isn't in here. He's both frank and discreet all the way through this. Mm-hmm. His fears were very real, and one of the interesting things about him is how often he writes about death. He doesn't do it in these letters very much, but certainly in some of his most famous essays, mm-hmm. the great essay called Once More to the Lake, which ends with an extraordinary feeling of death watching his young son put on a wet bathing suit, as he has done, and he did when he was a child. The wonderful book Here is New York, which ends with that remarkable passage about New York now being vulnerable to a flight of bombers. It was written in 1948, and everybody went to it right away after 9/11. It was such a premonitory thing. This mischievous and marvelous monument, which not to look upon would be like death.
Roger Angel of the New Yorker, a revised collection of his stepfather's letters, Letters of E.B. White, has just been published by HarperCollins. Mr. Angel, always a pleasure talking to you. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Scott. Bye-bye.